Hi, this is Beth Joan Shaw with Spirit of Success, and welcome to First Things First, a weekly devotional for businesswomen who desire God's guidance as we seek to honor Him with our businesses. We meet by teleconference each week on Monday mornings to hear a word in the Lord and to encourage each other in prayer. We know last Tuesday I participated in one of the greatest privileges we have as Americans. I voted. I'm sure you have or will soon, too, during this primary voting season. The right to vote is what distinguishes us as a democracy, where we, the people, participate in the decisions being made that govern our lives. And because we are governed by ordinary people, we don't always agree, and we don't always get everything right. We are human, after all. But we do have the opportunity to participate. As we know, not every country has this right that they share with their people. Some countries wield a heavy hand in the daily lives of their people to the point of dictating almost every aspect. It was like that in the days of the early Christians. Jesus spoke to this when he was asked, "To whom believers are to be loyal, to the government or to God?" Jesus' answer is recorded in Matthew 22, verse 21, where he said, "Render unto Caesar the things of Caesar's, and to God the things that are God's." Jesus was teaching us that we can do both, be a citizen of our country and be a follower of God. Now, we are blessed to have this freedom to worship our God in America. But as Erwin Lutzer has noted in our book, The Church in Babylon, it's being put to the test. Page 99, he writes this: "Caesar often competes with God for our allegiance. Under ideal conditions, the responsibility of the state is to protect its citizens and to enact laws that will enable them to flourish. But the state often overreaches with laws that conflict with individual freedoms. As a nation drifts from God, pressure builds as the state encroaches on religious liberty and plays the role of God." Well, we know in our reading that Daniel and his three friends found themselves as captives in Babylon, among a people who did not have freedoms. Although these young Jewish men had distinguished themselves and were even given the job of advisors to King Nebuchadnezzar, they still were living under the king's rules. Well, one night, the king had a crazy dream, and it bothered him so much, he asked for someone to come and tell him what it meant. Well, Daniel stepped forward, making it clear that he himself could not interpret the dream, but that there is a God in heaven who reveals all mysteries, who will interpret the king's dream. And Daniel then proceeded to share the interpretation from God. Every detail of the dream was accurate. And we read the king's response in Daniel chapter 2, starting in verse 46. "Then King Nebuchadnezzar fell prostrate before Daniel and paid him honor and ordered that an offering and incense be presented to him. The king said to Daniel, 'Surely your God is the God of the gods and the Lord of kings and a revealer of mysteries, for you were able to reveal this mystery.' Then the king placed Daniel in a high position and lavished many gifts on him. He made him ruler over the entire province of Babylon and placed him in charge of all its wise men. Moreover, at Daniel's request, the king appointed Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego administrators over the province of Babylon, while Daniel himself remained at the royal court." Well, that went well now, didn't it? Not so fast. You see, King Nebuchadnezzar, always just a tick behind, decided that the image in his dream sounded like a great idea. So he built a statue to himself to resemble the one in his dream, and then in his utter arrogance, decided that everyone should bow down and worship his statue, and those who didn't would face death. What happened to that "your God is the God of gods" thing he said previously? Oh, so quick to forget. Well, bowing to an idol is in direct conflict for God's people, but the alternative was death in the fiery furnace. So what would they do? Well, our author gives us insight in our book on page 106. He writes this, in the middle of the page, 106, "The orchestra sounded, the music began, and thousands of people bowed on cue. But three men remained standing." Now, we don't know where Daniel was that day, but if he had been there, he most assuredly would have joined his friends in defiance. Someone who resented these three young, stubborn Jews told the king that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego had refused to bow to the image. Enraged by their refusal, the king called them in for a personal conversation. Paraphrasing his speech in the vernacular of our day, he said, "Perhaps you didn't get the memo. Everyone is to worship the image when the music begins. Maybe you didn't understand, so I'll give you a second chance. We'll have a redo, and I expect you to comply." From Daniel 3:13. Well, their reply was immediate. They said in Daniel 3:16, "O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you on this matter. If this be so, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of your hand, O king. But if not, be it known to you, O king, that we will not serve your gods or worship the golden image that you have set up." This is one of the greatest expressions of faith found in all of the Bible. We believe our God will deliver us, but if he doesn't, we will not bow before your image. We will bow only before the God of heaven. Well, you know what happened next. Nebuchadnezzar was furious, and he heated the furnace to seven times hotter and had the three men thrown in. But when the king looked into the furnace, he saw the three young men walking around, and they were joined by a fourth who looked like the son of the gods. Oh, the Son of God, exactly. Yes, Jesus was in the fire with them. Well, these three young men were brought out, and they were brought out completely unharmed, not even smelling of smoke, not one morsel singed. And this time, the king acknowledged the Most High God as well as the faithfulness of these three young men who trusted God more than they feared the king. Now, to be clear, does this mean that God always rescues his own from fiery furnaces? No, no. We know there have been many Christians over the years who have been martyred, literally martyred. You see, that decision is left to the Lord. But what we do know is God is always with us in this life and in the next. So, chances are, you know, we're not going to face a fiery furnace, but the pressures we face to compromise our faith are real. Again, Dr. Lutzer writes about this on page 109 in his book. At the bottom of the page, he writes, "The pressure to compromise our own faith comes down to this. Is God faithful to what he has promised? Is God faithful to what he has promised? Is it true that he will never leave us nor forsake us, as he promised in Hebrews 13:5? The question is not whether we will escape the fire, but whether he will walk with us through it." He goes on to write, "In America, we haven't had to be concerned about being thrown into a furnace, but we do have to be concerned about whether we can still preach the gospel and its implications in our churches. We have to be concerned about whether chaplains in the military can share the gospel. We have to be concerned whether our churches are legally compelled to be rented out for same-sex weddings. We have to be concerned about the sexualizing of our children in the public schools. We have to get back to the basics. Are God's promises valid or not? And he continues on page 113. We need to embrace our predicament and to do so with joy. Peter, writing to believers living under the intolerant Roman government, said this in 1 Peter 4:12. Beloved, do not be surprised at the fiery trial when it comes upon you to test you, as though something strange were happening to you, but rejoice insofar as you share Christ's sufferings, that you may also rejoice and be glad when his glory is revealed. If you are insulted for the name of Christ, you are blessed, because the Spirit of glory and of God rests upon you. He goes on to write this, when faced with obedience to either the state or Jesus, we must always choose Jesus. We must purpose in our hearts to stand for liberty of conscience, not just for ourselves, but for those who disagree with us. This is why the phrase separation of church and state is so essential. We insist on the freedom to live out our personal convictions as guided by Scripture. Fear and anger are not options for Christians. We must be able to emulate the early church, which considered it a privilege to be identified with Jesus within a hostile culture. Well, may God give us the courage when tempted to compromise in this ever-increasing anti-Christian culture of today, to stand firm and proclaim as Paul did in Romans 1:16, I am not ashamed of the gospel, because it is the power of God for the salvation of everyone who believes. Well, thank you for listening, and I pray you received a word from God today that will encourage you and equip you to do your work as unto the Lord. And if you'd like to participate in our weekly live First Things First Tele-Bible Study Time, just email me, Beth, at spiritofsuccess.com. Thank you, and God bless.